Hey boys, hey Scotty, how you doing, mate? You had some
Boys.
clients over the weekend. It would have been a busy one for you, also trying to navigate the time difference. How are you feeling? How was your sleep?
I didn't have much sleep from Friday through till Sunday because obviously I had the show on the Saturday, and I was awake. I think it was about from 1 till maybe 5 a.m. and then kids were up at 6, so that was good fun. And then on the Saturday I had Wayne obviously heading over to South Australia for that show, so it wasn't as bad because I had MG there. And I had one of my athletes, Pete. So I think I was up from maybe 2 till about 4:45. So 2 a.m. I went to sleep early and then woke up at 2. And then Harvey was up at 5:30. So I just pushed through, got up, had a coffee, and pushed through. Yeah, but no, it was good, man. It was a big weekend, a very successful weekend. Obviously, the running two shows in a weekend can come with some challenges, but we navigated it really well. And Big Wayno did really well.
Yeah, there was actually a question that was said, why did Scotty get his client to do those two shows back to back and have to travel interstate? So, what was the decision behind that? Was it something that the client wanted to do? Like, what was the reasoning behind all that?
So full transparency, we decided probably about 2 days before that was what he wanted to do. He saw that they were giving away swords, and whenever he comes into my gym in Powerhouse, he's always infatuated with the swords that I got in 2017, and he's really wanted one. And it's really hard. They don't give them out in Melbourne, but they do in Queensland, I think, and I know they do in SA. So he said, "Can we do that?" And I'm like, "Well, we've already committed to a show on Saturday. But if you want to fly, then why not?" Or okay. And then and the other reason was as well, like from a professional perspective, both he and Pete, they have a gym and they're getting into the competition prep coaching scene. And so both of those guys also wanted to know what the process would be like in terms of how you manage it, what you need to do to still peak the look back to back, because it is a little bit more challenging, but we managed to do it. And equally, he was better on the Sunday than he was on the Saturday, and had a really, really good result, and equally learned a lot in the process. So I'd say it was a good result all around.
So he ended up getting a sword. That was his goal, right?
Yeah, so he did the show on the Saturday. He won the overall, and was awarded his pro card. Granted, it was a smaller show, and we didn't go as hard as we usually would to try and peak him, because we knew that we had to fly and also wanted to be a little bit more conservative so that we could really send it on the Sunday. And we did that on the Sunday. He woke up within the exact parameters that we had set. So everything, to be honest, went textbook. It went as well as it could have. And yeah, he managed to win his open class and then won the overall, and got that sword that he'd been longing for, and got that really cool shot that you do tend to get when you win a sword. So he looked awesome. Yeah, he looked
And
awesome, man. It was a good show.
I know we discussed last week, your client Ethan had a client that did really, really well in Melbourne, in Victoria, and then went up to SA and was going to be up against Wayne. So how did all that go down?
So his name is Ryan. So really lovely young kid. Oh, I shouldn't say young kid. I think he's younger. When I say young kid, I'm in my 30s, so he's probably in his early 20s. So that's what I mean by young kid. But he's coached by Ethan, so naturally, very humble, very grounded, from what I can tell. I've never met him in person, but I reached out to him and congratulated him on his showing, and he was a really nice lad. And so he was in the shorter class to Wayne. Wayne's obviously 6'2", I think. So he was in the taller class. And so Ryan didn't win his open class. I believe he came second. And so he didn't actually make it through to the overall. So he and Wayne didn't actually get to go toe to toe. But Wayne obviously went up against the open class winner. Sorry, the open class winner in the shorter class, which was the division that Ryan was in. And Wayne managed to pip him. But I believe they're doing NBA, Ethan and Ryan. So, and Wayne will obviously be at NBA as well. So I'm sure although again, they'll probably be in different height classes. But you never know who's going to turn up on the day. But hopefully, if they both win their prospective divisions, they'll get to battle it out in the overall. So
That's really cool because obviously different fed, different state, different judges. It'll be really, really interesting to see how that goes down. Yeah, for sure.
and the height and weight cap, because I know one of the first things Ethan said to me is he's like, "There's no way he's going to be able to do that. He's massive." And I'm like, "No, nah, he'll make the cap." I think it's one of those things. Sometimes when you're truly shredded and you're pumped up, you look a lot bigger than say when you're just flat as a pancake and you've got no carbohydrate and no pump. So it's going to be good. Just sort of sets the scene for a really, really big NBA nationals. I know both those boys are probably looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And obviously you had MG over there helping out. How did you go, MG? How was the day?
Man, it was a really great day. It was absolutely awesome. That fitness lineup across both classes was really good. Great standard. I did see both of the classes in that shorter class. You know, could have easily gone either way. You know, first and second were big standouts. You know, both had their probably better features, and it could have easily gone the other way. But you know, the both Ryan and the guy who won, both really nice, humble guys as well. And both deserve to be there. They bought great packages. But yeah, I was backstage, and you know, someone asked me where I was from and what I was doing there. One of the other coaches, and I told them that I was from Melbourne, helping out. You know, one of my best mates, whose athlete was just over there, and someone basically told me to fuck off back to Melbourne. So that just puts into perspective how Wayne was looking backstage. I got some videos on my phone, which I was on FaceTime with Scott at about 4 a.m. his time, trying to yell out to him, forgetting that it's 4 a.m. there, and he's trying to be quiet because he's got a family around him. But the look that they got that day was something pretty special, man. Like, I would say, I've been around the scene for a long time, that peaked look that I saw on Wayne that day was up there with one of the best presentations I've ever seen on any athlete. And I've got some video that I'll show you guys off air of him pumping up that put that into perspective. Like, the level of detail through the upper body, through the chest, through the shoulders, equally, you know, the rear delts, it was phenomenal.
That's awesome. That's so good. You're going to have to show me. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it's epic. It's epic. He was basically, what he was doing, he was pumping up, and against Scotty's other athlete, Pete, was, you know, simulating like doing a pec fly, right? So pushing against the weight of Pete's arms and really getting into an earphone bone to the point where he was grunting at the back, right? Really pushing himself up hard, because I think if you look at what happened at the ICN show at the Expo, where, remember, Scotty spoke about him falling asleep backstage and maybe not having as much time. This was the opposite. This was all about, this was pumping up hard to the point of almost, you know, exhaustion, where we were almost getting into sweat. But it was the difference, man. And obviously, whatever protocol Scott had put into play that morning was bang on. But it's crazy, man. It's a freaky video. I can't wait till I show you guys off the air anyway.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait to have a look at it. Maybe send it over to Scotty and he can post it on his socials. That'll be awesome.
Yeah, everyone can have a look at it, yeah. But the show itself was awesome, man. Getting up to Adelaide and, you know, just realizing that we have a lot of amazing supporters and listeners of the podcast in SA. I met so many amazing people on the day, was just so grateful to have been there for that as well.
That's awesome. I did see some photos that you got, and some people tagged the Prep Coach Potty IG page. So I did see that you got to meet some people, which is absolutely amazing. It's so cool. It's really, really cool.
It was an epic day. And I credit to ICNSA. They did a great job. The show was smooth, on time, actually slightly ahead, but, you know, very well organized. I think, you know, the show was probably something like maybe a 60 or 65 athlete show. There was some real highlights of the day. I don't know if we've got time for this, but I want to give a special shout out, actually. One of our listeners who I met on the day, who's a wonderful bikini athlete and just a delightful human being as well. Her name is Sally. She's a listener to the podcast, so shout out to her. We love the mums division, right? We talk about it all the time. We love the mums. Not only do we love coaching hardworking mums, but, you know, any time, and as a new father myself, hearing about a mum who, you know, is grinding and you know, going through the comp prep journey and getting on with the job, not knowing that they're battling some real tough adversities behind the scenes. And there was a moment that happened on stage that, for me, was one of the greatest competition moments I've ever witnessed being at a show. And, you know, guys, we've been to lots of shows, but it was just such a touching moment, and I actually captured it on camera. So I'm just going to give a little bit of context and background, because, you know, I think it's worthy. And shout out to anyone going through anything tough in relation to kids. And as I said, as a new dad, this really hit home with me. And, you know, I'll try not to get too emotional with it, but it was a super touching moment. But Sally's got a daughter named Lacey, who is 3 years old. And to give a little bit of a background, I got Sally to just give me a little bit more detail and context. But basically, Lacey's had a lot of health issues since she was born and basically spent the first 8 months of her life in ICU fighting for life. She's had a ton of feeding issues, a huge one being aspiration to her lungs, and she was nasal gastric fed until the age of three. At three, they realized the complications were much deeper. She is now PEG fed, which is, I think, through the stomach, through the belly button. She's going to undergo major surgery very soon to fix some other internal issues to try and get her some quality of life. She's also got autism as well, which comes with a lot of sensory challenges. Now, I did know about Lacey before the show, but during the mum's division, when they bring the children up on stage, this beautiful, you can tell I'm getting emotional, this beautiful three-year-old girl walked up on stage like she was a 10-year competitor. It's the most amazing thing you've ever seen. I've actually got the footage. I'm going to bring it up on screen and share my screen now. So if anyone's listening on Spotify, you'll probably just hear the applause from the crowd and you can hear the emotion in the room. Anyone watching on YouTube, you'll get to live it yourself. So I'll just pop it up on screen now. As you can
That's
see, like,
bro.
It doesn't get much better than that for me. But when you think about that and you think about not just the battle that she's been through, but just the way she walked up, nailed her posing routine, the confidence, the matching colour for mum, hitting that back pose, and then well done to Lacey and also for presenting her with a medal. But I just thought that was one of the most special moments. And sometimes, you know, it takes a moment like that for us to realise that sometimes the sport, you know, it does cop a lot of criticism, and, you know, there's a lot of people who sometimes speak negatively about it. But I think the sport is such a beautiful thing, and it gives us all so much. And I thought it was really important to bring up a moment like that. And shout out to Sally for you know, the journey that she's been through and what it took for her to get on that stage, knowing that you know, that Lacey has been sick and she's got some battles ahead. But we just want to, from the three of us, wish her nothing but love and support and you know, good health for Lacey in the future.
Yeah, that's amazing. That was, yeah, that's a very, very touching video. And yeah, just, she's so cute, wearing the same thing as her mom, same colors as her mom, just doing all the poses like her mom, and they give her a little medal too. Yeah, it's and you can really see the crowd's reaction.
Yeah, man, and that was just so genuine and heartfelt. That room was full and everyone was just going crazy. Her confidence had just, I stood up and I was clapping. I was just like, just own the baby, let's go for it.
Yeah, that's so cool. We actually, funnily enough, I'm going to jump to a question we got, and it's a question for you boys. It says, for MG and Scott, did having kids of your own change the way you support, coach, parents that are in prep?
Yeah, so I think for me, I've always been in the fitness industry and having coach clients that have little kids and being empathetic and loving kids, I've always been pretty understanding. But when you have kids, you have a different appreciation because you have an understanding of, you know, all those little elements of minutiae that go into running a household, the sleep deprivation when you got newborns. There's so many moving parts. And so for me, it just gave me a different element of respect of just what it's like to go through that. And having done it a couple of times myself, I compare the first preps that I did when I didn't have kids to when you do have kids. It's different, it's better, and it's harder in a lot of different ways as well. So I think it definitely, when you do see someone go through it, like if I see someone who's a dad, for example, get on stage, or it could be a mom that gave birth X amount of time ago and she's competing, knowing what you went through, what you put your body through, and then decided to still put yourself through that and do a contest prep, there's an enormous amount of respect that goes into that. And so I think a lot of people probably don't realize in that, you know, the mama bikini division, they probably just see it as it's a whatever division. But until you see what is involved in childbirth and you see what women go through, you'll never have that appreciation, that respect and admiration for what that human being has put their body through to create and bring a life, you know, into the world. And so I think there's so much that goes into that. And like I said, there's an enormous respect that I have. I always respected it, but until you see it and live it, you don't fully, like, truly understand, you know, what is involved. So I guess the short answer is, yeah, it probably did to an extent.
What about you, MG? Like, brand new parent, has it changed your coaching a little bit with other parents?
No, I wouldn't say it's changed my coaching. I think I've always been, like, ridiculously empathetic as well, maybe sometimes too empathetic. I don't think it's changed, you know, my strategy or the way I do things. But as Scotty said, like, when you watch that process, and I've spoken about on this podcast in previous weeks, like, just the level of respect for what women go through, like, to the point where, you know, if I just use me as an example, because it happened recently, like, not sleeping for the 2 months really prior to birth, maybe 3 months prior to birth, to literally giving birth and having to breastfeed after going through 16 to 20 hours of labor to breastfeed within the first 2 minutes of the baby coming out, to now being 9 weeks old and not really having longer than a 2 hour block or 3 hour block without feeding. It's incredible. And like, until you go through it, like Scott said, you respect it, but not to the level that you do when you witness it firsthand. So yeah, agree with everything Scotty said 100%.
All right. Well, I think it was good to bring up that question since the fact that we just saw that video, and I think it's a very, very timely question to ask.
Yeah.
A couple of other things that we did before we get into some other questions is, obviously, we released to the public the Bali retreat, opened up spots. Now, I think it's been not even 48 hours. And I think we just did a count before we started this potty. I think maybe we've got like one or two spots left, which is crazy. Obviously, we need to contact everyone that reached out, secure deposits, and then that'll be the complete secured numbers. But absolutely crazy reaction that we got from just one post that we did, and in 48 hours, pretty much already filled the spot. So if anyone is listening to this, I'm not going to mention on social media to say, hey, secure your spot, make sure you get it done. But if anyone's listening to this, literally go back into our socials, Prep Coach Podcast bio, and put your name down the list, because if for whatever reason, if we get too many numbers, but we reach out to everyone and some people pull out, they don't secure a deposit, we're going to be contacting you straight away. So make sure that you, if you're interested, let us know. If for whatever reason you can't make October, we are going to be doing it in March. So it'll be October and March every single year, and we'll be releasing those dates a little bit later in the year. So I know some people said, I can't come to this one, but I'd love to come to the next one. So we're definitely going to have one in March. I actually had someone ask, what does TMG stand for? It's well thought out. TMG stands for
the mass gainers.
Oh, yeah, okay. I tell people sometimes three massive guys.
See, I didn't think of anything funny. I literally just told them the truth, right? I just told them that it's, you know, all our surnames, right? Trimboli, Morel, Galanti, that's it. But what did you say? Three massive guys?
Three massive guys.
And what did you say, Scotty?
I can't even remember what I just said. Yeah, the mass gainers. Yeah,
the mass gainers.
You know what? Right. We could even make a t-shirt that starts to list all the names. And if anyone who's listening, if you guys can come up with some others,
it's the acronym that keeps giving.
But yeah, it wasn't overly thought out, and also it's not very genius. It's just literally our surnames put together. All right, let's get into some really, really good questions. The first one is a little bit more of a deeper one. Let's start with it. So first-time competitor, season B, I've just left an abusive relationship, and I'm wanting to know if you guys think it would be healthy for me to continue in a prep at this state. I am better spending some time working on myself to rebuild my life without the pressure of prep, or could I use this as motivation? What do you think, Scotty?
Without knowing all of the context and the ins and outs, I think my short answer would be, I think not adding pressure and compounding on what already sounds like a pretty, you know, sort of fragile state that perhaps you would be in. Again, having never been in a domestic abusive relationship, I don't know what is entailed, but I can only imagine. I think the worst thing that you could do is put yourself in a position where you're even more vulnerable. I think, you know, the best thing for this person would probably be just some consistency and some steady ground. You know, maybe you can still pursue your bodybuilding endeavors, but pursue it from a building perspective, not from a dieting perspective. You know, if you have a coach, work with your coach. If you don't, reach out, find a really good coach that aligns with your values. Focus on establishing some really good foundations that are going to underpin, you know, your direction and your career path as a bodybuilder, whether it's, you know, improving nutritional literacy, you know, really enjoying your training. I think bodybuilding can be very therapeutic if you allow it to be, in terms of really loving the process, enjoying training. You know, the weights are always going to be there. They're supportive. It's an outlet. equally fueling and nourishing your body with good food and just establishing some really good habits that, as I said, will underpin the future that you're going to take in terms of the direction, not just with your bodybuilding, but perhaps where you want your life to go. And I think once you've got some of those foundations set, then you can look to put in place some shows and a contest prep, because the stage will always be there. But I think, you know, coming off something like that, you're probably not setting yourself up for success if you're diving straight in when you don't have those solid foundations. That's just my opinion. Could be wrong though.
What do you think, MG?
Yeah, Scott is absolutely right. I mean, you know, you don't know how much psychological damage truly sits there under the surface. And I think, you know, even if you did go into prep and you were able to get through it because your motivation was high, you're going to find yourself in a really difficult place when the show's over, because you're going to be there to deal with that trauma down the track. I think, you know, what would be the best thing to do is take some time for yourself, focus on healing above and beyond, you know, worrying about getting on stage. And like Scott said, devote the time and energy into building the best version of yourself, so that when you feel like you emotionally have healed and you're in a good place, that you can tackle a prep with no strings attached and give it 110%.
Yeah, completely agree with you guys, what you said. You know, we always tell people, always go into a prep with a really, really stable foundation across the board, within your relationships, within yourself, within your routine schedule, within your life. So I think making sure that you have stability, physical stability, and also mental stability is, you know, going to make sure that you have a really successful prep. You know, we always talk about people wanting to be in this industry for the long term, and the last thing we want is for you to have a terrible experience and then come out the back end and then have to deal with maybe something that you've pushed to the side. The last thing we want is for you to end up in a hole at the end of this thing, because coming out of prep is tough in general, even when you have stability. But imagine coming out of prep when you also have to address some other things in your life too. So I'd say take time, look after yourself. The stage will always be there, and you can come back better than what you've ever been before.
Yep.
While we're talking about season B, another question came out about, I'm just about to start comp prep for season B, and I'm worried that I always get sick in prep. Can you suggest any sups to boost my immunity? Scotty, what do you think? Going into prep, boosting immunity, should we maybe be addressing to see how immunity is before we even start prep? What do you think?
Yeah, so firstly, I would say that you can't boost immunity, but you can put in place measures to optimize its function and ideally prevent deficiency. I feel like it's one of the common things. A lot of people think that this will boost your immunity and this will boost this, but you can't. It's not like, if you think about your immunity as a glass of water, once that glass is full, just tipping more of something in, it just spills over. It's not going anywhere and it's not making the glass any more full. So I think taking a food first approach and obviously trying to get a wide, diverse range of, you know, vitamins and minerals and micronutrients, but equally when you are in a contest prep, you're in an energy compromised state. So you do open yourself up to suppressed immunity. And so there are some things that we can do to help combat that. One of the first ones is obviously the calories that you do have and the foods that you have. If you're not following a meal plan, hopefully you're giving some consideration to the fruits and the vegetables, so you are getting a diverse range of vitamins and minerals. You could have a blood panel done prior, which I always encourage, so that you can see if in fact there is anything that perhaps you are lagging on. One of the big ones, and there's a lot of research supporting that, and we push it a lot over here with our athletes and players, is vitamin D3 supplementation, especially going into the winter months. If you're prepping through Melbourne in season B, the chances are you're not getting the same sunlight exposure. So there's some really good research to support that supplementing anywhere from 1,000 to, I tend to push the top end range of 4,000 to 5,000 IU of vitamin D3. The research suggests that is going to help with prevention of upper respiratory tract infections and potentially any kind of cold or pathogen that you might be exposed to. Maybe it helps combat against that. You know, vitamin C is another one. Most of us get enough of it within our diet, given that you don't really need more than sort of one serve of, say, if you're having an orange or an orange juice, or you're consuming potato, there's vitamin C in most things. I think it's just, again, ensuring that you are getting some vitamin C, and that can obviously make a difference in terms of preventing that with upper respiratory tract infections. I think it's 0.25 to a gram a day is where the research stands on that. And then the other one is, if you got sick for whatever reason that I'm familiar with, the zinc tablet. So I don't know if people have ever tried them. They're absolutely revolting, but they come in, I think they're 75 milligram ones. So having those, if you are, like, as soon as you get sick, taking them initially can help. But one of the biggest things, I think, is just staying hydrated. So a lot of people don't realize that when we ingest a pathogen, it's usually via three areas, either through the eyes, the nose or the mouth. And so when you're hydrated, you have a rich flow of saliva. And so when you have a flow of saliva, you get a nice rich buildup of antimicrobial proteins. And they're kind of like our first line of defense to help repel against pathogens. And so if you're hydrated, you've got a nice moist mucosal surfaces through the nose, the eyes. So in terms of ingesting that, maybe you're more likely to be able to repel it. And that's why when people fly on airplanes or they're in confined spaces, I'm always advocating drink lots of water, stay hydrated, because it's one of the best things that you can do to combat it. So they're probably the biggest ones. And then obviously when it permits, trying to be able to spend time at maintenance so that you're not energy compromised.
Yeah, awesome. I think another big one is making sure you look after yourself in prep, get enough sleep.
Yeah, sleep's a no-brainer. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Whilst we're talking about recovery, there was a question about ice baths, cold plungers, saunas, massage guns. Is there anything that you recommend from a recovery perspective?
So the ice bath, again, I think it's pretty widely known now that one of the recoils of having cold water immersion therapy is that it blunts the muscle protein synthetic pathway. So if you're trying to induce a cellular signaling response from a muscle protein synthesis perspective, you're going to be killing that via doing cold water immersion therapy. But equally, there's definitely some benefits from cognitive function, alertness. I tend to prescribe it more for athletes, like our rugby players, when they finish a game, they'll do their water therapy, water contrast therapy, they'll do heat, they'll do cold water. But for physique athletes, I tend to not really recommend it, because we know that the muscle protein synthetic response elongates longer than a 12-hour period. It can be, you know, upwards of 48 hours, I think even longer in some cases. So for the sake of trying to, you know, hang on to as much contractile tissue as possible, for me, the last thing that you would want to do is blunt that response. Things like the massage gun and all that sort of stuff. I think if people put more emphasis on getting 8 hours of sleep per night and ensuring that they, you know, dose their protein accordingly, and that they spend their rest days, you know, doing some joint mobilization, maybe getting some manual therapy, they're going to get a lot more out of that than they will from doing an ice bath, using the massage gun, or any other cryotherapy fancy technique. I think it's better to grab the lower hanging fruit.
Yeah, definitely. You know, one thing about massage guns, I think they're good if you're just doing, like, unless someone's doing it for you, but like if you're just doing your quads or things that are close, if you need to hold the massage gun behind your back, or it just becomes taxing, I'd rather just get on a foam roller or even just get a massage ball and dig it into a wall or something like that, and just do some self-massage that way instead of using the gun. And it's, you know, it's loud and annoying and those kind of things. So yeah, I totally get it. But I haven't done a cold plunger or sauna in a long time. You probably do it every day, Scotty, when you just go outside. Hey.
Well, going for a walk in shorts in winter, it was definitely like doing that. And I'd still be rocking the shorts regardless of that, but I don't think it was killing my gains. But I actually got in there just to see what it was like at the club a little while ago, and it's fucking cold. And I was like, nope, that's enough for me. Like, enough to remind myself of what it feels like, and also remind myself that I don't like it all that much. Again, if you're playing team sport and you're using it as a recovery modality, sure. But when you're trying to make gains, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it.
A no from me.
Yeah, totally get it. All right, let's move on. So there was a question here about when you're trying to make a decision on what division you should do, and you need to pick one. So you need to decide between one or the other, you know, to save a little bit of money, because otherwise you can spend so much money just doing 1,001 divisions. Mm-hmm. What's the best way to go about picking the division that you should be doing?
I think you need to liaise with your coach. So surely you and your coach would have an idea of what class and what division you're best suited to. You know, if they feel that you have a physique that is worthy of contending in an open class, I think you should do that. If you're a first timer, I think that you should do everything, because if you're competing, say, this Saturday, and you do your very first division, you're in the open class, you won't pose very well, you'll make mistakes, versus if you do the first timers and then you do the novice division and then you decide to do the open class after that, your open class will be your best showing, because your confidence will be there, you won't have as much nerves, you'll know the call outs, and you'll be a lot more familiar with the entire process.
Yeah. What do you think, MG? When you're trying to decide between divisions, you don't want to spend a hell of a lot of money on just doing absolutely everything. What's the best way to go about, you know, picking what you should do?
Yeah, so like, other than working with your coach, one of the things we talk about all the time is, you know, work with the federation as well. So reach out to the important people in the federation and you know, get their opinion on where you think that they're that your physique sits. I'm a big fan for my athletes always trying to step into one of their age classes as well. And, you know, I'll always encourage any of my mum competitors to do the mum's division for obvious reasons, which we spoke about earlier tonight. And, you know, even something like, you know, the Open, where I know there's a lot of athletes out there who don't like to compete in the Open. But, you know, we've seen athletes who have stepped on stage and done really, really well and not done the Open and potentially missed out on, you know, an opportunity to contend for an overall because they put themselves out of the Open before they even got there. So for me, I would always say, yeah, I would recommend age. I would recommend mums if you're available. And I would also say to do the Open every time because, you know, it's good to compete against the best and see where you stand. And if, you know, in a typical lineup, you know, all of the best competitors are going to be the Open. You're going to have competitors there who are no longer novices because they've won a novice division before. So they're now in the Open. And then you really get to see where you stand in a top lineup.
Yeah. I think one thing we always say too is probably make sure you don't want to be the smallest in the division from a muscularity perspective. You know, we always say you'd rather be a more muscular bikini competitor than a really small fitness competitor. So take a look at your muscularity and your physique. As long as you are matching your conditioning with the division, then take a look at your muscularity and then make a decision. Okay, do I, if I'm good for sports, do I jump into fitness? Is my muscularity there? Or should I go and be the biggest bikini competitor? So I think also have a look at your muscularity too, because that's going to be one of the biggest determining factors with your overall shape and trying to be competitive during that time too. So I think that's also a good one too, but everything that your boy said is awesome. All right, let's wrap it up. But one thing I wanted to quickly just chat about was carb sources on show day. Scotty, does it make a difference whether you have lollies or rice cakes? Should you pick what you digest the best? What do you think?
It definitely can make a difference. Obviously, they have different makeups in terms of, you know, lollies are just going to be pure glucose versus if you're having some rice cakes with honey, you can get that blend of glucose, fructose. So I think originally it'll need to depend on the individual in terms of what agrees with them. And ideally, you've used whatever you're using on the day before as part of your carb regime. Granted, you know, you might push in 2 snake lollies or something like that, 20 grams of carbs when you're about 20 minutes or half an hour out. But I think as a golden rule, if you're sticking on show day between the parameters, sort of 80 to 90 grams of carbs with those higher meals. And then I tend to work off a basis of around between 40 and 60 once we get to that sort of sub 2.5 hour out mark, just to ensure that we can digest everything and there's no delay in gastric motility. And also bearing in mind that you want to keep fiber very, very low. But I mean, too much rice cakes still have fiber. So that's something, if they're brown rice cakes, you need to be mindful of as well. So it really just depends, you know, on the individual. I think one of the main reasons everyone's always used rice cakes is they're portable, they're practical, they don't go off in your bag. So that they definitely can be a useful food source. I definitely use them, but equally, normally we do 2 or something like that with maybe some honey or some jam, that they'll have that with their salt tablets, or sometimes with some peanut butter. If the show is being delayed and you just want to get like 30 grams of carbs in without feeling like you've had a lot of volume, I think that's a better alternative. Whereas sometimes if you have too many lollies and you haven't had a lot of them, it can upset your stomach a little bit and induce a not so enjoyable bowel movement, and you don't really want to have that feeling or any kind of distension through the midsection. So you just want to keep things as calm as possible.
Are you worried about fructose at all if you're using jams and honeys and things like that?
You can be, yeah, for sure. But again, you'd need to have already tested that. And there's usually, everyone always has a threshold. So if you're talking about 10 grams of jam, and again, you've tested that before, granted, you're not going to introduce something like, say, let's say you've never had maple syrup for your whole prep, and then you're like, I'm going to have maple syrup on the day of the show. You wouldn't do that. But if you're used to having jam, like the day before when you have your pre-workout meal, maybe that you have, like, for example, I think with my guys, they'll normally have some Maximus sports drink, and they'll usually have like 4 or 6 rice cakes with either honey or jam. And then half an hour after ingestion, they'll give feedback on what was digestion like, how does your stomach feel pumping up? And if they're all good, then they're all good. But if they're not, then we know that there's a red line through that. But we definitely wouldn't be employing anything that we haven't tested and trialed, because what works for you versus what works for me versus someone else is always going to be different. But usually, as long as you're not being too assertive, and you don't go too crazy, especially on the jam, because that tends to, people usually in my experience have a threshold. Honey is a little bit better, again, anecdotally in my experience, for what people can tolerate. But you shouldn't need heaps and heaps of that anyway, because these are just the little sprinkles on top of the sundae, because everything else should be topped up. And it's more or less just to keep liver glycogen levels elevated, because muscle glycogen saturation should still be full to the brim.
Yeah. Awesome. And just lastly, because you touched on the Maximus sports drink, obviously it has some electrolytes in there, but also has some carbohydrate. Should people be thinking about liquid carbs on show day?
Yeah, absolutely. I use it as a way of being able to get in some fluid whilst also getting in some electrolytes. The reason I like the Maximus sports drink is it's an isotonic solution. So for anyone who doesn't know what that means, it basically has the same tonicity or the same concentration as plasma. So from an electrolyte perspective, if you're happy with where you're at, you're not pushing in more of one or the other, whereas most sports drinks will be a lot higher in sodium. And equally, the Maximus is a sucrose blend, so it's a combination between glucose and fructose, and like we've discussed multiple times, different pathways to be able to get in, so it's just a bit easier to digest. And that way you can get in a little bit of fluid, you can get some electrolytes, and you can also get some carbohydrate as well.
Awesome. I think that'll help some people this weekend when they've got some shows going on and they're at the show. They're like, oh, I've got my Maximus now. I've got my honey. I've got my jam. Scotty got me sorted. I heard it on the potty. So it was good to end on that one. I know you got to go. You got a jet set. So looking forward to talking to you boys over the next couple of days. I know there's a lot of shows happening this weekend. So do wish everyone all the best. I know I'm going up to NBA Brizzy. The next day is Adelaide. So it's a big day of shows for myself. But I know there's other shows in other states too. So wish everyone all the best for the weekend, and we'll chat to you all very, very soon.
Too easy. All right, boys, have a good day.
Good night, everyone. Thanks, guys.
See ya. Bye.